This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. Guess what? It is Wear It Purple Day tomorrow. Tonight on the show, we'll be discussing LGBTI youth in the wake of Wear It Purple Day, because that's just relevant. And I'm joined in the studio by one of Thorn Harbor Health's lovely interns, Jacinta. Hello, Jacinta. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, Renee. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, it's great to have someone who's actually youthful here. I know I sound really young and I act like it, but I guess I don't know a lot of the issues and a lot of the relevant stuff around LGBTI youth. So it's really great to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And after we play a quick song, which I might let you choose if you like, Jacinta, we'll be chatting to Brock Galway, who is a board member from Wear It Purple Day, as well as Dr. Karen Hallam, who is a senior research fellow at YSAS and a clinical psychologist who works with young people. We will also catch up with Garth Parkhill from Thorn Harbor Health on the new LGBTI youth program that has launched there. So it's all happening, Jacinta.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Are you going to wear it purple tomorrow?
I will be wearing it purple tomorrow.
Do you know what you're going to wear?
I do not know, but well, like every year, I'll find something.
Yeah, you'll dig something purple out. Well, I don't know if any of the listeners know me or know what I look like, but Wear It Purple Day is literally my day because I've had purple hair for approximately 3 years now. So when Wear It Purple Day comes around, I literally walk around looking like a big grape. I get a little bit out of control with that shit. In fact, I end up just dressing the whole office in all of my purple gear.
Yeah, it's the thing to do.
Yeah, and I have this really epic, like, Kath and Kim style, what do you call those? Windbreakers.
Oh, really? Suits. Oh, my
yeah.
gosh.
Yeah, so that usually comes out for Wear It Purple
Beautiful.
Day. Yeah, last year I also donned a purple monobrow as well. yeah, anti-fashion. But yes, we will be right back after a song and we will be talking about LGBTI youth. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy, and tonight in the studio we are joined by Brock Galway from Wear It Purple Day. Hello, Brock. Welcome.
Hello, and thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you here, especially so close to Wear It Purple Day tomorrow. You're one of the board members, is that right?
That's correct. I've been a board member with Wear It Purple now for 2 years, and it's crazy to think that it's only that short. It feels so much longer.
A lot's been happening, eh?
Oh, absolutely.
So would you mind telling our listeners all about Wear It Purple Day in case they haven't heard?
Yeah, of course. So Wear It Purple Day is a nationally celebrated annual day across Australia, and not just that, worldwide, that really looks towards creating safe, supportive and inclusive environments for the rainbow youth. And with this day, we have messages that we try and send out and help people to use these messages to not only help feel proud of who they are, but help encourage others to do the same and really elevate and decrease the bullying that goes on.
Yeah, cool.
So can you tell us about how Wear It Purple Day started?
Sure. Wear It Purple Day actually started back in 2010 by two school students in New South Wales.
Mm-hmm.
And it all came about after there were numerous reports of the rainbow youth in the community who were committing suicide as a result of bullying. And this was just all due to the way how they identified or their gender. And I think it was quite unfortunate, and really seeing so many of these reports come through, it took a great impact on the community. And I think a lot of people felt that. And so with these two school students, they decided to create the annual day and really ensure that there was an impact and a message going behind it.
And sorry, when did you say that was, Brock?
That was back in 2010.
2010, so it's been running for 8 years now.
Yeah.
And is there a particular message or vision for Wear It Purple Day 2018?
Absolutely. So each year, Wear It Purple Day, we have a theme that our Youth Action Council decides and implements. And this year's theme is Empower Together. And I think we've definitely seen a lot of people coming together for empowerment over the past couple of months and years. And with that, it supports our vision and mission to create supportive and safe and accepting environments for all the Rainbow youth. And then with the vision, it helps support that by we're trying to decrease the disadvantages by all the Rainbow youth in their environments and trying to help elevate their well-being and be equal with their peers.
Yeah. And so can you tell us a bit about what you think the key issues are for LGBTI youth currently?
From an outsider's perspective, looking at the youth side of things, it looks as though like there's a lot of education that is missing in the system, and it's really unfortunate to see that there's a lot of schools out there that have Rainbow youth and they've created their own groups to try and help support one another. But it's a bit of a shame to see the letdown in some of the schools or the system that won't help support them or bring education to not only themselves but to everyone involved, because you can't get to a certain point without everyone being involved and understanding this. So I think education is really something that has been lacking for quite some time and needs to be built up.
Yeah, it's a shame. Do you partner with any other organisations to try and spread Wear It Purple Day?
Yeah, so each year we help support a lot of schools and non-for-profit organisations by donating what we call packs or hubs. And essentially some organisations that we work quite closely with, maybe like ACON or in New South Wales, or Headspace, which is a youth mental health organisation across Australia. And what we do is we provide some resources like posters, how to get involved, a bit of the day, some wristbands, and this is a good conversation piece for everyone to try and use when they encounter people of the Rainbow community, that, you know, they can hold these conversations, give them a wristband, and with that we hope that they feel a sense of empowerment and that they can be proud of who they are and leave that day knowing that people are supporting them. So we definitely do try and get involved across as many organisations as we can.
Yeah, cool. Can businesses and corporates get involved, or is this more so for young people?
No, absolutely. Even my own workplace is supporting Wear It Purple Day, and I've been here for probably 3 months now, and it's really exciting to see the amount of corporate support that is going on outside in the community. So a lot of corporates will probably get involved by holding a morning tea or a panel event where they get to discuss some of the issues that are being faced in the community and really discuss how these people at work can be proud of themselves but take home the message, because a lot of the time some of these people may be their own parent to a youth or a Rainbow youth. So educating them on how they can help support a youth member or someone in the youth community.
That's wonderful to hear, Brock. I also wanted to ask, is there anything that our listeners can do to get involved aside from Wearing It Purple tomorrow?
Well, obviously Wearing It Purple is going to be the biggest support and message to show, but what we try and encourage everyone is to use our theme, promote that, and show someone that you support them. Maybe it might be reaching out to someone to say, hey, how are you going? Or letting them know that you support them. If there's any issues going on at that point in time, checking in with them to see if they're okay and letting them know of any resources that are available. Or if they even haven't heard about Wear It Purple Day or Wear It Purple itself, letting them know that we're here and we can have a conversation with them and talk to them. But it's really something that we want everyone to try and celebrate. So anything that they want to do to help show their support is definitely welcome.
Yeah, so visibility is the key one with this. And for anyone who's listening who hasn't made any plans for Wear It Purple Day, I've heard that there's something happening in Fed Square at 8 o'clock in the morning. Have you heard about this one?
Yes, I have. I definitely have.
If anyone wants to get involved, I think it's some sort of gathering anyway. So on your way to work on Friday morning, please stop by Fed Square and wear something purple in solidarity. Thanks so much for taking time to have a chat with us, Brock, and all the best for tomorrow.
Thank you so much, and hope you have a great Wear It Purple Day and celebrate very proudly.
Awesome. Thanks, Brock. See you later.
Thank you. Bye.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. Tonight we've been discussing LGBTI youth in the lead up to Wear It Purple Day tomorrow. We're going to have a quick chat with Dr. Karen Hallam. Karen is a senior research fellow at YSAS and a clinical psychologist working with young people. Hi, Karen. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you guys going?
Well, thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, please?
Yeah, sure. I wear two hats most of the time. I work at YSAS, which is the Youth Support and Advocacy Service in Melbourne. We're located all across Victoria, and YSAS works with young people who are perhaps having trouble with drug and alcohol issues, young people who might be having some trouble in terms of justice-related issues, and also young people who might be in an out-of-home care or foster care and things. So we kind of work with overall kind of a sense of disadvantaged young people who are struggling a little bit. And my role there is to try to find out, I guess, what leads to young people sort of falling off the edges a little bit, and trying to find out what works to help them get back on track.
Cool.
That's that side. And then on the other side, I also work as a clinical psych, so I specialise in working with young people for about the last decade, and particularly working with young people from the rainbow community. So, yeah.
Brilliant.
Wonderful. Yeah. And so what do you think are some of the biggest issues for youth from the rainbow community at the moment?
Yeah, it's a good question, actually.
It is a big question.
I know that recently there's been a lot of distress around the plebiscite and the impact that that's had. Yeah. I think it's kind of gone on a little bit longer than just the yes vote, even though that was a nice sort of outcome. Throughout that whole period, we were all very aware clinically that we were seeing a lot more people, a lot more distress. For young people, there was a lot more bullying. There was a lot more ostracisation from groups at schools and at unis and things. So that's kind of crept on a little bit. It seemed to have opened up a bit more of a dialogue that it's okay for people to voice negative opinion about people's choices. So we're still seeing that, but because of the group that I work with, which is mostly people who are still at school, really, it's still the old favourite of bullying.
Yeah.
And, you know, kids in particular, anything that makes you different is something that, you know, a group of other kids can have a go at you at, basically. So that's
online
the big
bullying
one I see.
Is online bullying a really
online
big one?
Bullying? Yeah. Absolutely. It's not like when I was at school. It's kind of relentless now. At 2 o'clock in the morning, your phone can ping and you're still being bullied.
Yeah.
And we're seeing a bit of a switch now where there's a lot more school acceptance of gay and lesbian bisexual kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still finding with a few trans clients that I work with that's much more of an issue for them. It's much more confronting for the other students. And they seem to really be copying much more of the brunt of that these days.
Yeah, I bet. And do all school kids have mobile devices now? Is that a thing?
Pretty much. Sometimes when we do some work when I do some work with parents, sometimes mobile devices can be taken away as kind of a consequence of something bad.
Mm-hmm.
But pretty much, they're all pretty much online all the time because they're actually required to be by the school, basically. All their homework is basically online now.
Wow.
All the school's communications. So they're kind of forced to actually go online, and it's not. And I know it's almost impossible to resist the temptation when, you know, your Facebook pops up when you're on something else, not to sort of jump on and have a look.
Yeah, I can imagine having all of that stuff online could become quite overwhelming as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And even if it's not something directly related to you, it's seen an article that, you know, makes a statement that perhaps is in line with what you think, but then seeing some of your friends write, you know, particularly negative things. I know during the plebiscite I had it myself where I kind of got on my Facebook and saw people who I knew of, perhaps not close friends, writing things that were very different to my beliefs and perceptions, and kind of going, oh my God, I can't believe they think that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though it hasn't been directed at you, because it's such a global voice, you still kind of can be impacted by it as well.
Yeah. So you were involved with the Youth Needs Census survey. Can you tell us a bit about the findings from that, especially around LGBTI youth?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Youth Mood Census was run by YFAS, and we also ran one in Queensland with Dovetail. And basically, we looked at all of the young people in AOD services. In the past, when we've reported on youth AOD, we just used general census of everybody in the community, mm-hmm. and nobody actually looks in depth at the people who are perhaps at what we call the pointy end. And so we looked at these young people, and what we sort of found was that, you know, not surprisingly, the big things that people use, you know, cannabis and alcohol. Mm-hmm. We found actually, we were a bit surprised just how big an issue cannabis was. You know, everybody's opinion of cannabis varies, and that's fine, but we were finding that, you know, 2 out of 3 young people using cannabis each month, but a lot of those, still about half, were using it pretty much every day.
Wow.
And when the workers reported what they thought was the big substance that they were worried about for the young person, most of the time it was cannabis. And associated with that, we tended to see that they weren't really going to school. They weren't really necessarily engaging in work. They were having a bit more conflict with families. Nothing terrible was happening to them. They weren't necessarily becoming homeless or something.
Mm-hmm.
But they just kind of sort of slipped behind, I guess, which was a bit of a worry.
Mm-hmm.
When we looked at the LGBTIQ community, for a start, unfortunately, because we had so few people of transgender, intersex and queer, we had to exclude them, which sounds a bit sad, but it was to keep their information confidential because there were so few in our group. And so we just looked at gay, lesbian and bisexual people. And some of the findings from that were actually a little bit horrifying, to put it bluntly. So what we found is that the substance use was pretty much the same. So most young people use the same stuff. They had 50% higher rates of trauma than other young people.
Wow.
So that trauma includes things like physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, emotional abuse, and a traumatic event like violence against them as a young adult.
Mm-hmm.
We found that 1 in 4 of these young people had attempted suicide, which was a lot higher than the rest of the group. We found that nearly 40% had engaged in what we call non-suicidal self-injury. So this used to be called self-harm. This is basically hurting yourself by cutting or burning or something else
mm-hmm.
to relieve psychological distress. And that was double the rate of the rest of the group.
Wow.
And we also found that they had 50% higher rates of diagnosed mental health issues than other young people. So basically, 1 in 3 young people from the rainbow community that we could test had a mental health issue, which again was pretty much double the rate that everyone else was.
Yeah.
And so we were quite concerned that even though their profile of substance use looked pretty similar in terms of mental health, they were really struggling
mm-hmm.
and looked like significantly more distressed than anybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a short break and we're going to come right back after a song. We'll talk to Karen Hallam quite shortly. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. This evening we are joined by Dr. Karen Hallam, who is a senior research fellow at YSAS and a clinical psychologist working with young people. We just spoke with Karen about some of the issues now around LGBTI youth currently. So, Karen, is there much support out there for LGBTI youth in these areas that we've been talking about?
There actually is. There's a lot of good news around support. There's support in a few different areas. So for a start, if anybody has any issues with alcohol and other drugs, if they've just got questions, if they are thinking to themselves, I'm not comfortable with where I'm sitting, or even if their parents are starting to notice something, the first place that I would say they should go is to YODA, which is a telephone, internet chat and just a website. It gives you lots of information and there are youth workers there who can talk you through. There's no, you know, you have to stop it or anything like that. They just talk about, you know, what are the parts, what are the good parts, what are the bad parts, you know, what services are in your area, who they can link you in with if you want it. If mm-hmm. you're a parent and you're worried, they can give you a bit of support because it's really hard to talk to young people sometimes about drugs. And it's hard to not just be really reactive as a parent too and mm-hmm. just sort of try to stop things. And so they can guide you through that process as well. So that's a good start in terms of alcohol and drugs. Because of that, those significant issues we found with mental health, we're really concerned that people are getting mental health care if they need it from this community. There's lots of places people can go. So one of some of the obvious stuff is Headspace run services for young people that you can just go to. You can go and see a counsellor there. I would also say beyond Headspace, if you hop on the internet, you can often find people who will sort of, you know, put their hand up and say, I work with this community.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the best places are actually to start with your GP, as much as it's a bit scary to go to your doctor. They have actually heard it all before, typically. And get yourself what we call a mental health plan. So a mental health plan will get you 6 to 10 sessions of psychological or a social worker helping you out. And so you can actually take that to any psychologist or social worker. You know, just give them a call. You know, check out what their fees are. Some people are afraid that it costs a fortune. Most psychologists, including myself, we charge on what we call a sliding scale. So if you can't afford it, you might even be bulk billed, so it costs you nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then people who have a lot more money, they tend to pay a little bit more to sort of, you know, make up for it.
Yeah,
so there's lots of places to go. I'd say minus 18 are brilliant for young people who are still at school. But then I also want to give a shout out to some of the Rainbow Network initiatives around Melbourne. Every council basically has some groups that run for LGBTIQA+ young people.
Mm-hmm.
I know in the north, in my area, there are social groups, art groups, movie night groups, and they're super inclusive places, and I love sending my clients to them because they're just a space where it's just no judgment. Everyone takes care of everyone. Often the slightly older young people help take care of new people in the group.
Thank you.
It's out of school, no judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So I always think they're really great too, because sometimes you don't need a psychologist, you just need some friends to kind of get where you are.
So what can young people's parents and families do to support their young people who are questioning or have recently come out?
Yeah. I guess the first part of that is it can be hard for families. This is news to them as well, often. Sometimes, of course, parents know for a long time. The first thing to do is to, if you can, as a parent, take a moment for yourself to actually see how you're going with it. It's okay that you don't feel okay instantly. When somebody says something that's really big to you, you don't have to be perfect straight away. The one key message that we want parents to get across is, I'm still digesting this, but I love you and I support you. And then it's okay if there's an exploration together of, you know, what this means for them as a family, for the young person, and then that parent can get help as well. But the most important thing for families is just to have that very fundamental of it's still okay. We're still okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you really don't need to know the answers straight away. And sometimes it doesn't actually help to know the answer straight away because the young person doesn't know them either.
Yeah.
So as long as you're willing to go on that journey with them, a lot of families that I see, a lot of young people I see, we all talk as a group. We have family sessions and we talk through, you know, what it's like, what's going on for everyone. The parents get a bit of support themselves and then they get to hear what's going on with the young person as well.
Yeah.
So you don't need to know all the answers, just that very fundamental baseline of we still love you, we care about you, and we'll figure it out with you.
Mm.
That's the takeaway I always try to leave parents with.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Well, thank you for all of your advice and information, Karen. It's been really informative. And later on in the show, we will go through all of the services available out there for our listeners. Thank you for calling in. Have a lovely evening, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, cheerio.
Thanks. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy.
I'm joined in the studio by Jacinta. Hello, Jacinta.
Hi, Renee.
And we have Garth on the line from Thorn Harbour Health. Hello there, Garth. How are you going?
Hi. Good, thank you, Renee. Hello, Jacinta. How are you both?
Oh, fantastic. All the better for hearing your voice, babes.
Thanks,
Phil. tonight we've been discussing LGBTI youth in the lead up to Wear It Purple Day tomorrow. Garth, can you tell us a little bit about what your role is at Thorn Harbour Health?
Yes, certainly. So I'm the team leader of the Alcohol and Drug Services program here at Thorn Harbour Health, which encompasses like one-on-one counselling, care and recovery coordination. Like we have a a really extensive therapeutic group program, a peer-led program, and we've just recently expanded our program to include youth and family work, which is really exciting.
Yes, and as per usual, we've used the TH in the youth as a crazy little pun for the name, so it's youth for Thorn Harbour.
That's right. Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
So yeah. Youth. Clever.
We're all working together.
We are. So
can you tell us a bit about the new program that you're about to launch at Thorn Harbour Health?
Yeah, sure. So it consists of like a couple of parts. So we do a few parts, actually. There's one-on-one counselling, case management, brief interventions, and a group program. So we define youth as persons between the ages of 16 to 25, anybody of LGBTIQ who identifies as LGBTIQ. And so we're looking at people who sort of perhaps have issues with their substance use, who want some support around that. And,
cool.
And we're doing this in collaboration with YSAS, and we also outposting our youth services 2 days a week at Dandenong Way as well. So we're reaching further out.
Yeah, great. At Thorn Harbour Health in St Kilda, or?
But we're also just establishing sort of partner relationships with other organisations, so we can hopefully outpost our youth workers anyway. And we also have outreach capacity. So as we're a state-funded organisation, we have the capacity to move pretty much anywhere, or theoretically across the state, but realistically anywhere across Melbourne. So anybody who identifies as an LGBTIQ youth between the ages of 16 and 25, we can sort of do outreach work with you, so anywhere across Melbourne, which is great.
Cool. And is this only in relation to alcohol and other drugs?
Yes, at this stage, yes, it is. Yeah. So it's an alcohol and drugs program. And we're also part of that, so I forgot to mention the other really exciting part is we've developed a youth program, so which is quite unique. I don't think anyone's doing it quite like we are. So it's an AAD, or alcohol and drug use program.
Mm-hmm.
And we've broken it in, instead of like having a continuous like 8-week therapeutic program like we normally do, we've broken it down into components. So they're short, sharp, kind of bitey groups that sort of focus on specific areas. So we look at sort of harm minimization and harm reduction. We look at social interactions. And we're also looking at the impact that sort of like being an LGBTI person who might have substance issues in a social context. So what it means being an LGBTI and how society views us, and things like internalized homophobia, internalized transphobia, internalized biphobia, and all those sorts of issues that really impact upon a person's self-esteem and their feelings of self-worth, and then how that can impact upon their substance use and mental health.
Wonderful. Can you tell us, Garth, a bit about how does one access the services?
Yeah, so to access the service, you can either call myself here at Thorn Harbour Health, or to access the program sort of directly, we have an intake number, which is 1-800-906-669. I'll give you that number again. It's 1-800-906-669. And so that's a Thorn Harbour Health intake line. So the young person can ring up and say, I'd like to access services. They'll do a brief intake and you'll be referred back to us. But if you have any further questions, you can give me a call here on 9865-6700 and we can discuss best ways forward.
Cool. And the office is open there between 9 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. Monday to Friday. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes, it is.
Cool. Will there be other organizations or services referring people on to the program, or is it up to the young people themselves to get in touch?
No. We've been part of the program is we're doing a lot of what we call capacity building. So we're getting out there and we are making sure that other organizations are aware of this service. We're having a lot of material printed at the moment, so we're taking it out there. Hopefully it'll be in lots of areas where people can see it and can read about it and has the way to contact us. And then other people who, you know, if a young person's at a service, they will be able to see, the service will be able to recommend them into our service and tell them all about it.
Yeah, wonderful. So just to reiterate, the service is called Youth, and that is Thorn Harbour Health's newest youth program, and it's around alcohol and other drug use. Is that right, Garth?
That's correct, yes, yeah. And so even when we're talking about alcohol and other drugs, we're also talking about, you know, we don't just look at your alcohol and drug use, we look at your life holistically. So, you know, a large component of that is mental health, physical safety, physical well-being, relationships. So, yeah, we like to think that we take into account count all domains of your life.
Yeah, awesome.
All interconnected.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and filling us in on the youth program, Garth. But you have a wonderful evening and we will see you soon.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for your time and happy Wear It Purple Day, everybody.
Oh, thanks, Garth. Cheerio. Welcome back to Well, Well, Well on Joy. Hello. Tonight we have been chatting about LGBTI youth. In the lead up to Wear It Purple Day tomorrow, I've been joined by my colleague Jacinta.
Hello.
Hi, doll. there's been a lot to take in today.
There has.
How do you think the issues have changed for LGBTI youth throughout your youth, compared to when you were like tiny youth? Because how old are you?
I am still young. I'm only 21 this year, so I'm still a youth.
You're still youthful. Yeah. What do you think the issues are now and how they've changed since you were at school?
Yeah, I think that things have changed a lot. You know, I remember when I first started questioning, I sort of, doing like little sneaky Google searches.
What did we do before Google?
Not really finding anything. Whereas now there seems to be heaps of services available.
So what did you search, like, am I gay? What is gay?
You just do like, search lesbian and
see what comes up.
Some of the things that came up,
I can only imagine.
It's very confusing for a young girl.
It's actually really confronting and overwhelming. Yeah. And I came out when I was about your age, which is a bit older. And I remember hearing the first lesbian couple I'd ever met talking about things like fisting, and it scared the shit out of me. I was this isn't what I signed up for.
Yeah.
So, the internet is a big, vast place.
It is, yeah. And I think that the internet is something that's also changed recently too. You know, kids have social media now, and there's a lot more information on there, and I think it's a good thing because there is more helpful information and more resources.
Yeah,
so that definitely can help when you're, searching for answers or just interested in finding out things about yourself or other people.
Yeah. Cool. So you reckon things have changed where there's more use of the internet, but there's more useful resources out there for young
absolutely.
People.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Do you think that the issues change for LGBTI youth as they leave school?
I think that it does. I think that beyond school you do find more connections with other LGBTIQ people.
Yeah.
Certainly through the services that are available now that can be really helpful if you're a bit isolated.
Yeah.
I guess coming from somewhere, I came from like a public school, not in the metro region. I've lived out near Frankston.
Burbs.
Yeah. Mm. So, that can be a bit, I guess, isolating. I'm sure for other people in rural areas, even more so.
Mm.
So certainly for myself coming to university, a lot of unis have queer groups and other places where you can meet people and, like you.
Yeah. And for a lot of young people, that's the first time they've ever met other queer people.
Absolutely.
And queer people who are really expressing themselves.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's really lovely to watch other friends who are LGBTIQ, I guess how they kind of grow up and come into themselves.
Yeah. Also, just if you are queer and you are at university and you haven't got in touch with your queer social groups, make sure you do, because that's where you make your friends and chosen family.
Yeah. And there's always lots of fun things happening. Like, it's not all serious, let's sit in a circle and talk about our identities. There is a lot of group lunches and activities and formals and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. yeah
Well, that's fantastic. And do you think that homophobia is still as rife, or do you think things like biphobia and transphobia are becoming bigger issues?
I think that discrimination is still there. I think now that the LGBTIQ community is a bit more visible, certainly in the last maybe 5 to 10 years, a lot of things have changed. And I find personally for me that I don't face much discrimination in my day-to-day settings, so at work or at uni or in public. But I think that there's definitely a lot of discrimination out there still for especially trans and gender diverse people. I think transphobia is still a really big issue.
Yeah, cool. So Jacinta, from your own experiences, do you have any advice you'd like to give LGBTI youth out there?
I think that making use of the services that are available is really good. It's a great opportunity to connect with other people, but to also find the support that, you know, is really helpful. I think that sometimes we can think that we don't need to use those services or that we'll be fine, we'll get through it ourselves. But being able to see the solidarity in other people around you, you know, particularly with things like We're at Purple Day and having those things celebrated in school, it can be really eye-opening about who is there to support you and just how loved and accepted you are.
Oh, that's really cute. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, good. And, you know, having people to mentor you and look up to and stuff like that is very important as well.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you, Jacinta. We'll be playing a song shortly and we'll be wrapping the show up just after that. When I had Kayla on the show, we did a wrap-up rap. Are you keen?
I think I'll have to pass. I don't think I have the skills that Kayla has.
Nah, we all know she's batshit crazy. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy. Tonight we have been discussing LGBTI youth in the lead up to We're at Purple Day tomorrow. Jacinta, what has your experience of We're at Purple Day been?
We're at Purple Day is really special for me because it was something that was celebrated at my high school probably from about year 9 through to year 12, so end of high school. And so we did like a purple theme day. We had things like signing agreements to support people and like really, really visible like solidarity. So that was really nice. To know that you had support from your teachers and your peers. And it was also a way to, I guess, connect with other queer students, other LGBTIQ students who...
Because at school you maybe don't have...
Yeah, exactly. Like something to, I guess, explicitly be connected to together and to bond over.
That's lovely.
Have
you had much to do with or do you know much about Minus 18?
Yeah, so Minus 18 did visit us a couple of times in high school and did the presentations that they run for young people.
Yeah.
And Minus 18 was an organization that I was aware of. I never really attended any of their events as a young person, but I certainly accessed their resources online and kept up with what they were doing on social media, which I think is really helpful for young people when they are questioning their sexuality or thinking of coming out.
Yeah, they have really great online resources. Yeah, and also we'll give their formal a plug. They have a formal every year that
young people can go to. The formals are really exciting. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you can dress how you want and you can bring whoever you want and it's very expressive.
Yeah.
Awesome. I wish I could go. I wish my formal had been like that. No, they're doing really great, wonderful work there. And CF Schools, is that still rolling out across Australia at the moment?
I think it is in Victoria. Mm. The Victorian government has pledged to continue funding Safe Schools and continuing the programs because they are very helpful to young people in high school.
It's a shame that the rest of Australia doesn't get to experience that.
It is,
And Safe Schools is not a subject that's taught in the classroom for anyone who doesn't kind of understand what happens with that. In your experience, was it teachers, principals?
So Safe Schools was something that I think the teachers helped initiate along with some of the students in my cohort. Again, I think it was around year 9 when we became part of Safe Schools.
It's more about a support or to be trained to support students in their own journey, right?
Absolutely. It's about giving teachers and other staff in the schools the resources to be able to support young people who may be questioning their sexuality or facing issues like bullying.
Yeah.
Because that does happen a lot for young people. There is discrimination there and they do need support from members in the school community to be able to have access to things like services and, you know that they are supported and that they can be themselves in the school setting.
And you've seen Safe Schools in action.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I definitely benefited from Safe Schools while I was in school as a young person. It certainly did help me to come out and to be comfortable with my sexuality while I was a young person.
Yeah.
And it's helped beyond school as well. When you have that support when you're young, it lets you, I guess, become comfortable with learning who you are, because as a young person, you are discovering yourself and finding out, you know, mm-hmm. about life.
Yeah.
So to have solidarity and support from the people around you is really important.
That's wonderful. And I know there's a lot of hearsay from parents about what they believe Safe Schools actually is.
Yes.
And any parents listening can rest assured that it's not some form of sex education.
No.
It's not compulsory as part of the curriculum. The program does not encourage kids to question their sexuality or gender. It just supports those who already are.
Yeah.
There's a lot of myths out there, Jacinta.
There is, yeah. there was a big fuss about it all, but I think we need to remember that this is about supporting kids who, you know, need the support, and it's just about providing services to people to be able to support young people properly.
Yeah, and for those who are listening tonight and would like to access any services related to LGBTI youth and their families, Jacinta's going to go through and name you a few.
Yeah, so the services that we have include Lifeline Australia on 13 11 14, Kids Helpline, you can reach them on 1-800-55-1800, Headspace is 1-800-650-890, Switchboard Victoria, which is a wonderful service, you can reach them on 1-800-184-527. Parentline is 13-22-89. And of course, for emergency medical assistance, please call 000. And Karen mentioned before the Yoda line service, which you can reach them on 1-800-458-685.
And we will list all of those on the website along with the podcast. If anyone would like to check those out, we are at joy.org.au/well. Well, Jacinta, it's been so lovely having you on the show.
It's been lovely being here.
Yeah, I reckon we might have to get you in for some shows somewhere down the line.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And next Thursday evening, we'll be back on Well. For more LGBTI sexual health and well-being from the team, we have been Renee and Jacinta. Good night.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.